It may seem upon the initial reading of this 14th chapter of Genesis that in some ways it may seem to be unnecessary and even out of place, an interruption in the historical record detailing the lives of Lot and Abraham. After all, does it not seem that nothing untoward really happened? Yes, Lot was taken captive, and his goods as well were taken, along with those that were in Sodom and around in the surrounding cities, but everything was safely recovered. And as we have read down that chapter, we have noted that the scripture emphasizes that Abraham was able to recover all. He recovered Lot and he recovered all his goods and he brought him back and he brought back a number of the others as well. So the question may well arise, well, what's the purpose of this chapter? What is it that the Lord is seeking to convey to you and I as we read through these chapters in Genesis? And we have been thinking about Lot, and now we've come to this chapter. So where is the connection? What is the context here that we are to be aware of? Well, I want to suggest to you this morning that we look at it in a particular light. We are all aware and we acknowledge that it is the Lord who governs all events, and nothing happens by chance, and everything is in direction of His sovereign purpose. So there is a purpose in this chapter. There's a purpose in every event, and there's a purpose in this chapter, I would suggest to you, particularly with regards to Lot. Not just the fact that he was in Sodom and that he was taken captive and that he needed to be delivered. That's very obvious. But I want you to consider it in another light. I want you to consider it that the Lord was giving Lot an opportunity to break with what he has been doing. The Lord is giving Lot an opportunity to break with what he has been doing. We took a little time on the last occasion that we were thinking about Lot to follow that path that he was taking. And we noticed some of the stages along that path, how he set his face towards the plains of Jordan and these cities that were wicked. And then he pitched his tent towards that. And then finally we noticed how he wasn't living in the tent any longer at all. Now he's living in a house in Sodom. So we know the path that Lot is on. But is the purpose of this chapter that the Lord is giving Lot an opportunity to break with what he has been doing, to change the course of his life? I think that is a good deal, the reason why this chapter, and certainly the early part of it, is mentioned here, that the Lord is giving Lot an opportunity to break with the course of action that he is taking. To break with the men of Sodom, to get back into fellowship with Abraham, even to get back into living in the tents of Abraham. Those were good and blessed times in Lot's life, until there started the dissension between the herdsmen of Lot's cattle and the herdsmen of Abraham's cattle. But surely it was a blessed place for Lot to be living in the courts of Abraham. This man who is the friend of God, this man who has the inheritors of the promise, this man who has been given Canaan to inherit, was that not the place where Lot ought to have been and should have been? Rather than following the path that he was, taking him in the direction that it did to now where he's living in the city of Sodom. And his soul is vexed. We finished off last time looking at those words in Peter, 2 Peter, where it tells us that Lot was vexed every day. Well, here's the Lord giving Lot the opportunity to get out of that situation where he was vexed and to get back into fellowship with Abraham. The Lord does work in various ways. The Lord is ever gracious, and that is certainly the case, I think, here as we come to think about Lot. Now, before we come to think of a couple of points specifically, I don't know whether Lot was aware of the prevailing political climate when he made his choice. The grass isn't always greener on the other side. Remember what it said about Lot there back in chapter 13 and verse 10, where it says that Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar, then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan. But what Lot didn't seem to know was all the political circumstances that were transpiring. Did Lot not know that the men of Sodom were servants? Which is an interesting picture indeed of the hallmark of sin. Any sin. Sin brings people into servitude. And these cities, Sodom and Gomorrah and three other cities that are mentioned, they're listed for us here in chapter 14, verse 2, for example, and other places down the chapter as well. There's five kings that are listed there, and they're all servants. They're in servitude to these other kings further east. And those kings are all from what we would understand today as Iraq, maybe even over into Iran as well. They're from that particular area. It tells you there the king of Shinar. Well, we know where Shinar is. Babylon sat in the plain of Shinar. And then there's Eleazar and Elam and Tidal, king of nations. So down in that southern part of Iraq and even over into Iran as well is where these four kings have come from. But they have subdued the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah and around that place as well and brought them into servitude. And it tells us there in verse 4, that 12 years they had served Chedorlaomer, and then in the 13th year they decided to rebel. And all of this is taking place as Lot makes his choice and as he sets off in this course that he's chosen for himself, and he thinks these plains of Jordan are just absolutely fabulous. I'll be able to raise any number of cattle and get wealthy. And little does he know the trouble that he's going to ultimately be heading for. Going our own way ends in trouble. Always. Christian, going our own way, doing our own thing, always sooner or later ends in trouble. There's a harvest to reap, and Lot's going to reap the harvest. As much as it seems to be appealing, and it's going to be a very prosperous course for Lot, these plains of Jordan, there's none the like of them for raising cattle compared to that hill country where Abraham's going to have to live. The grass is going to grow a lot better down in the pastures of the plains of Jordan than it is in the hill country. But who would you rather be, Abraham or Lot? Because Lot didn't realize what was transpiring and the uprising that was going to take place, and then what was going to happen, because it tells us in the 14th year, verse 5, that these four kings come on a mission of vengeance and recompense, and they're just conquering one people after another, and there's a list of them made there in verses 5 and 6 and into 7. Just one group after another, all just being overrun as these four kings are wreaking vengeance on this whole area. And they're not finished yet, because their ultimate destiny is take on the king of Sodom and Gomorrah and these other kings that have joined with them. And it mentions there in verses 8 and 9, 10, this battle that transpired when there was this uprising, and then the consequences have to be faced. And Lot is in the middle of it all, and he's going to reap no end of trouble. And it tells us there in verse 11 that they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. So Lot is taken as well. He's not spared. How could he expect to be spared? We don't read about them fighting against Abraham. In all the lists that is given to you there in the previous verses, there's no mention made of them coming anywhere near Mamre. Wasn't all that far away from where Lot is. Abraham more than likely would be able to have looked down from the hills, down into those plains and see these cities of the plains. But there's no mention made of any of these four kings coming against Abraham. It's not Abraham who's going to reap trouble. It's going to be Lot who's going to reap the trouble. But in the midst of that trouble, is there not a timely warning given to Lot and an opportunity given to him to change the course of his life? I want us to consider this in that regard and see this golden opportunity that the Lord presented to this man to break with what his present course was, to recover himself and to get himself back to where he ought to be. Sadly, Lot passed up on that opportunity, as we'll come to see. He rejected that timely warning. But nevertheless, we're going to consider it and see how the Lord was was dealing with him. I want you first of all to consider God's merciful deliverance of Lot on two counts. God's merciful deliverance of Lot here on two counts. First of all, the Lord extricates him from Sodom. And then on the second account, the Lord delivers him from his captivity. He has been taken captive by these four kings. And the Lord, through all of this, has miraculously spared his life. There's many who have been slain. Even the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah have been lost in the slime pits as well. But the Lord has been watchful over Lot to a certain degree. He hasn't spared him trouble, but he's spared his life. So he's got him out of Sodom, first of all, and got all his goods out of it as well, remarkably. And then when he is taken captive, the Lord overrules it in such a way that Lot is going to be delivered alive there, and all of his goods are going to be recovered once again. How merciful the Lord has been to Lot. And is it not the case that oftentimes God's mercies are wrapped up in troublesome events? We might just see the trouble. We might not see the mercies behind them. We might not count them as mercies at all. When God sends troublesome events to make us to stop or to consider our ways or to turn us off one course and onto another course, we don't see it as mercies. We just see the trouble. But maybe in times of trouble, the Lord is actually giving us mercies that will cause us to stop and turn and consider our ways. And you can think about some of the details here that are mentioned in this chapter, because the Lord overruled in these circumstances in many, many ways. There's so much little detail that is given in this chapter. It surely is, I think, important to notice it. Why are all these little details given? It's just not the Lord filling out an account. The Lord's not doing that. There's a reason for each detail. For example, what about the man who escapes? There's a man who escapes. And not only does he escape, but it tells us that he escapes with the desire to go and tell Abram about what is taking place. Is there not mercy here built upon mercy towards Lot? Why should anyone escape this slaughtering match that has been brought about by these four kings as they're going to overrun this whole area? And whoever they haven't slain, they're going to take alive and take them as captives. But the Lord has ordained it that there's one man who's going to escape. Just one man who's going to escape. And that one man who's going to escape, of all the things that he's going to do, he's going to go straight to the hills of Mamre. And he's going to tell Abraham about what has happened. Is that not mercy shown towards Lot? That this indeed would be the case? What about the compassion that Abraham showed towards Lot? Abraham may well have said, well, Lot has made his choice, he can live with it. I give him first choice, and that's the path that he chose. Well, let him reap the harvest, let him sort himself out. Because it wasn't without its risks. When we think about what Abraham did when he heard this news, it wasn't without its risks. And we'll mention that in a moment or two. But Abraham could well have said, well, he's made his choice. But Abraham didn't. Because we read here that upon hearing this news in verse 13 about what has happened, verse 14, Abraham takes his trained servants, 318 of them that are born in his own house and trained in his own house, and he begins to pursue after these kings who have taken Lot and taken all his goods and others as well. And if you begin to plot some of these places on a Bible atlas, you will find that there's a considerable effort that is engaged in here by Abraham. It tells you in verse 15, he divided himself against them, and he and his servants by night, and smote them and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. So when you think about where this all started out, Sodom and Gomorrah are reckoned to be somewhere where the Dead Sea is now. There's even a point of view that believes that the Dead Sea came about as a result of the judgment, the fiery judgment that fell upon those cities of the plain. So we're down somewhere at the Dead Sea. We certainly know where Mamre is in Hebron. That's down south of Jerusalem in Judea where Abraham is. And then we read about Dan there at the end of verse 14, how they pursued them unto Dan. Well, that's the very northern part of the land of Israel. Dan had that inheritance up at the very northern part. And then they go even beyond that. It tells us that they've gone on now to the left hand of Damascus, to this place called Hobah. That's reckoned to be a distance of anywhere between 150 of 200 miles that Abraham has pursued these men in order to deliver Lot. Abraham's going to considerable lengths here to deliver Lot when he hears of what has happened to him. Not only that, Abraham feels his vulnerability in all of this. Turn over to chapter 15 and verse 1. And look at the opening verse of chapter 15. It says, after these things, so after the events of chapter 14, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. Why did the Lord say to Abraham, I'll be your shield, I'll be your protector, I'll watch over you, I'll keep you? Was Abraham fearful? Was he fearful of those who would maybe come back to enact revenge on him for what he did? It would seem, it says, after these things, there's a connection. What is said there in chapter 15 and verse 1, by the Lord Abraham, I'm going to be your shield and your exceeding great reward, has some connection with what has gone before, because the chapter says that. After these things, the Lord said this. Was it the fact that Abraham felt his vulnerability? He had put himself out on a limb in doing this. After all, he's only got 318 servants and a few others who are allied with him. But the Lord says, Abraham, I'll look after you. I'll protect you. So Abraham has gone to great lengths to follow after Lot and seek to deliver him. All of these are mercies that can be added up, one on top of the other, with regards to Lot. The Lord is bringing mercy upon this man to extradite him out of that situation where he is in the city of Sodom, and he's there and all of his goods. The Lord has got everything out of Sodom that belongs to Lot, and then he's got everything back from these kings that was Lot's as well, because it emphasizes that in verse 16. It says, and he, Abraham, brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods, and the women also, and the people. It's very unusual that in a battle like this, somebody wouldn't lose their lives. You think of some of those hostage situations that develop from time to time, and maybe special forces have to go in to deal with the hostage takers, and sadly, oftentimes, maybe some of the hostages end up losing their life in what transpires. But the amazing point here is that the scripture emphasizes that Abraham has been able to bring back everything. He's been able to recover everything. That seems unusual. Out of the ordinary. Why would it be out of the ordinary? Well, is it not mercies upon mercies upon mercies that the Lord is giving to Lot? Bringing him to the place where he's going to be brought out of Sodom. He's going to be brought back from being a captive. And he's going to have this golden opportunity to break with that course of action, that way of life that he has set himself upon. I take it that these are remarkable circumstances, and the only explanation that I can see that stands up is that the Lord is giving Lot here this opportunity. Now, is Lot going to take it? Sadly, he didn't, because as the chapters transpire, we find him back in Sodom. As you work your way on through, and particularly then into chapter 18 and 19, when those three individuals come to visit Abraham, and then two of them go on down to Sodom, and you have the record there of what happened in Sodom and its destruction. But was the Lord giving Lot a very timely warning beforehand? The destruction that ultimately befell him and his family later on, Lot couldn't turn around and say, well, the Lord has dealt harshly with me, because the Lord got him out of Sodom. And the Lord brought him to that place where he could have said, Abraham, I'm going to come back alongside you. I'm going to come back to live in the tents. Lot had that golden opportunity, and he didn't take it. And nevertheless, God's mercy stopped this man. And we need to be conscious too, Christian, when the Lord's mercies are dealing with us in this same way. The Lord can speak to us and direct us and give us opportunities to change course. How gracious the Lord is. We ought to be aware of them and embrace them when they come and make sure we're on that path that is indeed pleasing to the Lord and not ultimately ruinous to us, even as it was to Lot. So there's mercies here. I want you also not to think, not only is there mercies here, I want you to consider an example that is here. Because when we come down the chapter a little bit further, we come upon this incident in verse 17, where the king of Sodom went out to meet Abraham after his return. And the king of Sodom is mighty grateful for what has happened. Indirectly, he is benefited by Abraham going to deliver Lot. Now, the rules of warfare were such in those ancient times that the victor claimed the spoils. Everything belonged to Abraham. Abraham is the ultimate victor here, and those who are allied with him. So Abraham had a claim upon all that was brought back. All of the goods that were recovered, and even all of the people as well. Abraham could have put a legitimate claim upon them. Those were the rules of war, that the victor takes the spoils. But Abraham didn't do that. Abraham didn't live by that rule, that he was going to take the spoils. The king of Sodom realizes this, and he suggests to Abraham that he can have all the goods if he would only give the people back. As I say, the king of Sodom had no rightful claim on that. That was not the rules of war. The king of Sodom hasn't gone to fight. It's Abraham and his servants and those who helped him who have gone to fight, so they have the claim upon all the spoils of victory. But the king of Sodom's out looking for the people. That's what he wants. He wants the people. You can take all the goods, Abraham. Just give us back the people. But Abraham's response here certainly provides an example for Lot. So there's mercies that are noticeable in this chapter, and then there's an example that is noticeable in this chapter as well, because what we read of Abraham doing here is given to us in verse 21 down to the end of the chapter. There's a little interlude here with Melchizedek. We're not going to get to that today. But it takes the incident with the king of Sodom back up again in verse 21. The king of Sodom said unto Abram, give me the persons and take the goods to thyself. And then here's the example. Abram said to the king of Sodom, I have lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet. That I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abram rich, save only that which the young men have eaten, and the portion of the men that went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre, let them take their portion. So here's Abraham's example. And Lot is standing there. Lot is looking on. Lot is observing all of this. And why is this happening? Well, it's happening for a reason in Abraham's life. But what an example and testimony it is to Lot. Abraham has made a covenant with God on the matter. Hardly surprising that a godly man like Abraham setting out on an expedition like this would have sought the Lord about it. And what you read there, though it is not directly mentioned in the earlier verses, for example, in verse 13 and 14. For example, in verse 14 it says, when Abraham heard this, he armed his trained servants and pursued them on to Dan. We read about the physical actions that he did, but we also learn that he sought the Lord about it. Those details are given to us further down here when in verse 22 Abraham said, I've lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. Abraham had already made a covenant with God about the matter. So while there are the physical details given about what he did, he heard the news, he armed his men, he pursued after them, and there was the subsequent deliverance of Lot. There's something else that he had done. Something that is taken just as granted. Something that doesn't really even need to be mentioned, because it's to be understood that that would be the case with a godly man like Abraham. He's going to seek the Lord about it. And in seeking the Lord about it, he's made a covenant with God. And isn't that the marks of a godly man? And what an example compared to Lot. We don't read about Lot saying, well, I've made a covenant with God anywhere. You'll not find those words coming out of Lot's mouth. I've sought the Lord about it. I've covenanted with God on these things. But again, the obvious question is, well, who should we be more like? Who should you and I be more like, Christian? More like Lot or more like Abraham?
Surely more like Abraham, a man who sought the Lord about it, a man who knows before God what we ought to do. In any particular situation, certainly instances like this. So he has prayed over the matter. I take it that Abraham has learned his lesson. Remember what happened with Abraham going down into Egypt. So much of Abraham's troubles came about, not only by the fact that he went down into Egypt, but that he took things of Pharaoh. He was enriched by Pharaoh. Pharaoh made him very rich. And those things became just a source of trouble. They were the source of trouble between Lot and Abraham. I've mentioned before about Hagar too. More than likely she was one of the maidservants that had been given to Abraham by Pharaoh, for she was an Egyptian. Has Abraham learned his lesson? And in that sense, is he not again an example to us even today, that's the mark of a Christian. They learn their lessons. None of us are perfect. We make our mistakes. But surely it's important to learn from the mistake, not to repeat it. It's when you repeat the mistake, that's when the folly comes in. Yes, we can make a mistake. We can set out on something that we ought not to have done. Again, the Lord never told Abraham to go down into Egypt, but he went. But I take it that Abraham is a man who's growing in grace. And here's the marks of a Christian growing in grace. Yeah, they may fall. Any Christian can stumble. Any Christian can make a mistake. It's what you do afterwards that counts more. Do we learn from our lessons? Do we show growth and grace? Do we show spiritual maturity, or at least spiritual maturing, and that we're going to say, well, once bitten, twice shy. I'm going to be on my guard against that very point the next time. I've been caught out once. I have fallen. I've stumbled and failed on this point one time. I'm not going to let it happen again. I take it that that's Abraham's attitude. And I take it that it's a mark of a Christian growing in grace, learning their lessons in life. As we know, life is a school. And in that sense, we never leave school. We're always been taught lessons by the Lord. We are to be those who are able to observe and notice and learn. Turn over a moment to 1 Corinthians 14, please. First Corinthians 14 and verse 20. The church at Corinth could have benefited from the spirit of Abraham, learning from some of their mistakes. They just seemed to keep repeating them in a different way. And there was no end of trouble in that church in Corinth. But here's what Paul has to say. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 20. He says, "Brethren, be not children in understanding. Howbeit in malice be ye children, but in understanding be men." And the thought is here of maturity. That's what the picture is. Don't be immature as to understanding events that are happening in your own life or even in the world around us. But we're thinking particularly here about things that happen in our own lives. The lessons the Lord would teach any one of us as we pilgrimage through this world. We're not to be immature. We're not to be children. We acknowledge children can be immature. It's part of childhood. And we make allowances for children and their immaturity. We know that. We can't expect them to act like adults. There's certainly a level of expectation we can have, but it's not going to be the same as an adult, fully mature. So children are going to get allowance because of just the fact they're children, and therefore they're immature, and therefore they're not going to make the wisest choices at times. They're not going to see the thing in the right way. And that's why they need parental authority and others to instruct them and guide them as well. So Paul is saying to the Christian, well, now don't be a child. Don't be immature. No, don't be. Not in the matter of understanding. He says if you want to be immature, if you want to show no understanding in things, then let it be in the case of malice. No, simplicity would be helpful there, he says. And there was a bit of malice working in that church in Corinth. But then at the end of that verse he says, no, in understanding be men. In understanding be adults, be mature. And the Christian is to show that growing maturity. And a young Christian too can make mistakes. We are described as children growing up. And a young Christian can make mistakes. But surely, Christian, the point is, do we learn from it? I take it Abraham was learning from his mistakes, and he's not going to repeat it. So when the same kind of scenario is presented once again, where the king of Sodom says, Abraham, you can take all of these goods, Abraham says, not a chance. I am not even going to take a thread or a shoe latchet of you. I'm not going to take anything. Nothing whatsoever am I going to take off you. You're not going to say that you've made Abraham rich. That's not what's going to be said. I wonder, did Pharaoh throw that up to Abraham? When that incident happened there just a chapter or two previous for where we are this morning in Genesis, and Pharaoh found out that Abraham had told him a lie, I wonder, did Pharaoh throw that up to him? Abraham, you did this after all that I gave you. After all that I gave you, you did this to me. Why did Abraham say that? I'll not have you say, you've made Abraham rich. Did Pharaoh say that? Did Pharaoh throw that up at him? And Abraham's determined, I'm not going to repeat my mistakes. And Christian, surely, is that not a way to live by God's grace that will say, by God's grace, I'll not repeat my mistakes. I may make the mistake the first time, but I'm not going to repeat it. By the grace of God, I'm going to learn from it and be the better person, be more on my guard. So there's much that is happening here with regards to Abraham, but the point in the context, all of this is in this chapter, and is it here for Lot's benefit? Is the Lord giving Lot an example? Is the Lord saying to Lot, look at the example of this man. Look at the example of Abraham. And follow that example. Have done with these men and cut the ties when the Lord has got you out of this place and all that you have and brought you back from captivity. Have done with all of this. Sadly, Lot did not learn his lesson. We'll conclude with that thought just. Which one of these seemed to learn their lessons? Abraham or Lot? And again, which one should we be like? Should we be like Abraham, the man, yes, who stumbled and made his mistakes, but he's a better man for it and he's learned his lesson? Or are we going to be like Lot? Just going on the path that he's on, and as we know, he's heading on to ultimate ruin. Well, his soul will be saved because he's a just man, but he's going to be one of those individuals that will fall into that category that you read of in the New Testament, saved as by fire. Saved as by fire. Everything he has is going to be lost. Wouldn't it be sad, Christians, if we got into heaven like that, we've lost everything, and we're there just by the skin of our teeth, to use another scriptural phrase. Oh, we're there because we're saved. We're there because we're justified just like any other sinner, but we're just there by the, as though we were by fire. May we learn from Lot and Abraham too.